Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular inspiration.
To make it, so I didn't know what was going to happen with today's show. Well, we have a surprise guest for you. Cheryl Simone is my guest today, and we're going to be talking about Midnights with the Mystic. Intriguing? Well, let me tell you, it is very well done, and I think you will find the information fascinating, as well as our guest. Cheryl Simone, welcome to the show. Thank you. Now, I can just barely hear you.
How about now?
Oh, that's much better. You sound so much better right now. That's great. Okay, I was so intrigued with your story, but I want my audience to know about you. You have been a lifelong student of what you call the human potential. You have been a spiritual seeker. You're an entrepreneur. You're married, you have a family, you have been a CEO of many different businesses. You, however, for all of what would be considered absolutely the ideal in the minds of so many individuals, were never satisfied. From the time you were a little squirt, you always were asking questions, and you wanted different paradigms. Cheryl, what do you think made that happen with you? Because not everybody comes into this life experience with that much curiosity. You seem to bring it in with you.
I have no idea where it came from, and a lot of times I wondered if it wasn't a curse, because it kind of just eats at you that you have this desire to know things you can't know. And what really drove me nuts was a few people on the planet seemed like they were able to find answers.
Mm-hmm.
And I could never understand why not me, because I didn't see that I was born any different. You know, I had all the tools it seemed like to be successful. Why couldn't I get anywhere on a deeper level? So it drove me nuts. When I had a classmate die in first grade, it was the first time I encountered death. And I think that's what really kicked it off in a big way.
Mm-hmm. Now, for you, you did something interesting with your book. You had a gentleman by the name of Richard Vogt, and tell me if I mispronounced his name.
No, that's right.
Richard was a man that walked a route that I don't think many of us would want to walk.
No.
He was a junkie. He was a drunk. He'd been a drug dealer. And he was what he calls in here, and it's in quotes in your book, he was a commodities broker and illegal narcotics, you know, and I'm reading this right at the beginning, and I'm going, oh, this is cool. This is the guy that you have right in the very front of your book. And I'm going, all right, what have we got here? So my curiosity was piqued. But this is a man who went through a major transformation, and it was with a particular individual. Tell us who that individual was.
Well, it's Sadhguru is the teacher and the yogi. And Richard, if you met Richard, he's been on Oprah. I don't know if you saw him. You would never know his past was his past. You would never label him as somebody who's been through that. He's very intelligent, and he's very nice, and he's warm.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd never know that he would have done any of those things. You know, I don't know how he got there in the first place. I only know who he is now. And you know he met Liz Gilbert at an ashram in India, the woman who wrote Eat, Pray, Love.
Yes.
And I don't know, so many things have happened to Richard. His health has improved. His spiritual journey is on. He's an example of what, if you connect to something real, what it can do.
Well, and the significant part of his story is that he almost, in my mind's view, seemed to choose the bottom of the barrel scenarios so that he actually could experience this transformation and bring out that side of himself that really could shine. So he's a walking, talking example of, yes, you can be in the darkness of life experience, but you don't have to stay there. That's not a requirement.
It's not who you are either. You know, there's a word called namaste. It means I honor the God in you. We all have the same spark. It doesn't have to go there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, his, and I won't go into it a lot, but his story is so interesting. And for all of the recognition he's gotten, he really has given the recognition to this individual who changed his life. And I know what that can be like when you encounter someone who sort of turns the light on inside of you. Maybe you've got it on a little bit, but when you come in contact with certain people, when there is that harmonic, that light all of a sudden becomes like a full-scale beacon, and it's not this little diminutive type of something that just blinks every once in a while. And that's what you were looking for. You were looking for freedom.
I was looking for freedom, but I really didn't want another individual to be involved in that happening for me. You know, I wanted to be able to do this on my own. I tried everything. I tried every single thing I could think of. I went everywhere. I went to Brazil and drank ayahuasca with shamans. I hosted a very high Tibetan Rinpoche who lived with my family and I for 9 months. I had a lot of Tibetan friends. I met the Dalai Lama. I've been with a lot of different beings, but I always saw them as friends, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that I have the same spark in me. Why, you know, why do I need any help? But for some reason, I couldn't seem to jumpstart this. And so Sadhguru is a guru, and it turns out the only reason I'm here is because he's real. He's a real guru.
Mm-hmm.
Who needs another teacher? We can pretty much learn everything we want from a book. But if you really want transformation to happen, the way he explains it is if you want to have other dimensions open up in you, if you want access to these other things, if you're with somebody who already has that access, it's an easier path for you.
Yes, and through many different cultures, there has been the belief, the tradition, that if there is that right, and these are my words, the right harmonic between you and the other person who has the gifts, those gifts can be passed along.
Mm-hmm.
They will be passed on, especially if someone's in transition. But it's just quite fascinating what your story entailed. The Midnights with the Mystic, which is really the truth. You did have Midnights with the Mystic. But more importantly, your journey is what I think is so significant here. Even more, and this may sound a little odd, than your teacher. Because your journey, I think, has such value in that you talk about your curiosity. You talk about your dissatisfaction. You talk about the choices you went through, that you really had to evolve through these experiences so that you could then be able to communicate with this man.
Pretty much, pretty much. You know, somebody, I was asking somebody if they were a seeker that I met recently, and they said, well, I'd like to think that I already arrived. And I said, I guess that depends on where you thought you wanted to go in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
If you just wanted financial stability and success, you know, lots of people in this country have arrived. But is that really enough? Isn't there really possible, you know, more than that for us? And when you are doing well and you have a nice husband and you have money and you have your own business, you feel kind of bad that you're not satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's only by not being satisfied that you don't settle. And it's only by not settling you have a chance to evolve into something much more.
Now, you had looked for quite a while.
30 years.
And everybody goes through their own particular grouping of experiences. And I had to chuckle to myself because you thought you had really gotten to the point where you just knew it all and you got into the soulmate cycle. And I had to chuckle again when I read this stuff on the soulmate and you realized that this really wasn't a reality. But this experience with your first partner, your first marriage, was coming into an understanding of your misconception. Tell us a little bit about that and how that person came into your life. What were you going through then?
Well, I was young. I was only 18 when I met him. And at the time, I think I was looking for my soulmate. You know, I think everybody I was dating, I was looking for myself, so to speak. And when I met him, I felt like I had found it. And when you fall in love, when you fall deeply in love, you are in that space where you see yourself in that person, and they see themselves in you, and they're kind of a key to open up something to some bigger love inside yourself. So it's really easy to get addicted to that. But to learn that key, that love is inside us. We can have that on without an addiction to any other person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was glad I learned that at a young age, because it kind of, I don't know, I know women my age now that are still looking for that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And there are many people who are looking for, because of what we have been indoctrinated with, that individual,
right,
whether it's a male or a female, that is going to create the ideal environment or perception, and then they go through the disillusionment, finding out, oh my goodness, you're a human being. You're not.
Right. You paint some marvelous picture nobody could ever live up to.
Yes.
Did you remember what Sadhguru said about soulmates in the book? He said, the soul doesn't need a mate. It would be incomplete stuff if it needed anything.
Mm-hmm.
Which was pretty interesting. You know, if you can really get this open in yourself and you can just shower that on everybody you meet, isn't that a lot more fun way to live than being out there needing somebody to unlock this in us?
Well, also, too, it allows you, when there are persons in your environment, you enjoy them for who they are, and good, bad, or indifferent, you don't try to be them, and you don't incorporate them into you in any way, shape, or form. You are okay with your own individuality, and as the old saying is, you're comfortable in your own skin, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and that's a real harmonic.
If you're constantly looking for somebody to complete you, how can you ever be anything but anxious, really?
Mm-hmm. Very
Even
true.
Even if it's working for a minute, then you're still anxious, is it going to continue to work? You know, if you can get liberated of that in yourself and just find it, it's fun. It's so much more fun to be alive and not be meeting.
Mm-hmm. But it's hard for other people to understand that when you're not.
Well, you know, it's all these things. You know, you think money's going to make you really happy, and money's wonderful. I think we all love it. But there's many very wealthy people unhappy, and very many people who are very joyful who don't care about money at all. So it's independent. Your happiness is independent of money. So if your happiness should be independent of a mate, too. It's wonderful to have a mate, but your happiness shouldn't be conditioned on it. Then you don't attract somebody that you want in the first place if it's out of need.
Now, your teacher, when you were introduced to him, share how you met this man. Share how he came into your life.
I was going to, you know, like I said, I was never satisfied, so I've been on this spiritual trek for all these years, and I would try a lot of different things that presented themselves, and I was going to California to a meditation retreat, and I was laying over in the airport in Phoenix, and I saw a guy meditating when he was in the airport, and he had a nice glow about him, and I noticed him, and after I went to this retreat, the same man came and sat down next to me in the airport in Santa Barbara. And I was feeling really like I was suffocating. I was, I don't know, having a lot of fear at that time. Fear my husband might die, fear my mother was going to die, fear my dog might die. I just, even though everything was working, I just was choking on the fact that things could happen in life that I didn't think I could handle particularly. So anyway, this nice-looking young guy sits down beside me, and he's kind of got this glow about him, and I comment to him, oh, last week I noticed you in the airport in Phoenix meditating. You look like your meditation is working. Mine is not working. And he said, oh, mine didn't work either until I met my guru, Sadhguru. And I said, well, who's Sadhguru? So then he starts to tell me all about him. And I don't know, he was a little too ardent for my taste and a little too, I don't know what the word is, but too enamored or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, how many limousines does this Sadhguru have? And then the poor guy just turned white, and I know he was thinking, oh, there's no hope for her. So he said, you sometime, if you ever have the chance, you check him out for yourself. So I just filed it, and a couple months later, I was in Atlanta, and I went to a Deborah Primal concert at a Unity church. I don't know if you know her, but she's a wonderful musician. And most of the spiritual stuff I had done, I'd left the state because Atlanta's pretty Baptist, and I'm in the business community, and the New Age community, I don't know, it wasn't anything that I had anything to do with here, but I thought that I would, you know, check out the church because I had enjoyed the concert so much. So I went on their events page, and up popped Sadhguru's picture, and it was going to be 20 minutes from my house in about 3 days. So I didn't, nobody told me he was going to be in Atlanta. I didn't read an ad. I just somehow just went to that website, popped it up, and there he was. So, you know, obviously I had to go see what that was about. And when I went there, I went and walked up front and off to the side and thought I just wanted a close look. And then they rearranged the stage and put him right in front of me. And so during the whole talk, it was like he was just talking to me. But when he walked into the room, I knew him. It was like I had always known him. Something was anciently familiar to me. And I knew he embodied what I was looking for.
And that began the journey.
And that began the journey. That was 6 years ago. And it's been so much fun ever since. So
now,
much fun.
You wrote the book along with him to represent him. And how did that come about? How did he feel confident with your being the author of this publication representing him?
Well, I had a desire to hire a biographer to write a book about him because I wanted something I could introduce to my business friends because he speaks at the World Economic Forum. He's not somebody that people, thinking people, couldn't relate to and understand. And yet, because he's also a guru, there's a kind of phobia to that. So I wanted something that could introduce him. And I had asked him if he would allow me to hire a biographer to write a book about him, and he told me absolutely not. So I just kind of filed it, and then he had a week that he ended up spending at my lake house. He does what you would call inner work, and sometimes he goes into seclusion, and I had offered my lake house if he ever had any time to use it. And so then he took me up on the offer, and he spent a week there, and he was with his assistant. And he told me he would be busy during the day, but in the evenings he would be available. So in the evenings, lots of times 11 or 12 o'clock at night, we would take the boat out and go into this go on this island in the middle of the lake and light a campfire and get to sit and ask the mystic everything we wanted to know, from soulmates to love to money to reincarnation to how he became a mystic to anything I could think of. Karma, anything. And it was so fascinating that when I was journaling on my computer, it just turned into a book. And so that's how it happened. I could have written 5 books.
He talks about successful people being those individuals who have a certain amount of mastery over their minds. And relative to you, he said you'd made a lot of small things happen, but you had not yet been able to make big things happen. And you needed to be able to make big, big things happen if you can experience the source of creation that's within you. If you can shift your whole focus to yourself, you can rewrite your own destiny. And he said that was one of the many, many points that he gave about a teacher being able to empower the student. There is so much wisdom that is shared in the conversations that you had with him. It makes for wonderful, wonderful reading. And if you take the time to sort of chew your mental cud over it, it really can make a change. But I'd love for you to share the story about his grandfather and his grandmother.
Isn't that beautiful?
I love that. And his grandmother lived to be 113 years of age. And she recognized him. She was the oddball in the family.
Definitely.
And so he came into this family, did not fit the norm, was a rebel with a cause. And she just would tell him when he was growing up, he'd look at her and she'd be dancing and she'd be having a wonderful time. And he'd want to know what goes on, and she'd say, "You'll know one day." She was in her bliss.
She actually went into ecstatic states. Nobody else around her had a clue on what the heck she was doing. She was dancing. She was throwing flowers with her feet. They all thought she was nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't help love her either. His grandfather was some kind of exporter of something, and he was extremely wealthy. The way his house was described, it sounds like the house itself was on an acre of land.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to lend money to people in the town. And Sadhguru, when he was a boy, found the whole process of him lending this money repulsive. You know, the indebtedness and the way he treated the people, and they had caste systems where people were considered untouchables, and
mm-hmm.
he would throw the money at the untouchables. He said at the other side of the house was his grandmother's door and her domain, and the people would go from this horrible experience of borrowing money from his grandfather, only being there because they had no choice because they needed the money, to going around to the other side of the house to just be in her company because they loved her company so much.
Mm-hmm.
So he's throwing money at the untouchables, and she's hugging them. So he said it was just an amazing thing to see these two worlds functioning in the same way.
Well, she did something different, too, because they were considered the richest people in the town, but she built her own temple, and she built it with her own hands, and it was on someone else's land, which I found fascinating.
Kind of a slap for the grandfather, wasn't it?
That is amazing. And she did this because this meant something to her, and this was her identity. This is her expression, and she wasn't going to let him take ownership of it at all.
And that long ago in India, that was really something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really something anyway. This is a totally free bird who doesn't, you know, and what a statement she was making to him.
Yes, when she was 64, she moved out of the house.
Yep. Yep.
She left him behind. Now, she'd go and she'd visit in the mornings, but she said, "Nope, I've had it. That's it. Bye."
Amazing, isn't it?
And in her, what was that time frame when she did it? Because she was in her 60s at that time. She lived to be 113. When was this? Was this in the early 1900s?
I think she died like 20 years ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, not that long ago. And when she would feed the animals, and she'd give them all her food, and they'd say, "Why aren't you eating?" And she'd say, "I ate with them."
Mm-hmm.
They'd all say, "Oh, you're going to be sick. You're not taking care of yourself." But she lived to be 113. Evidently, she knew something.
Absolutely. She absolutely had a love of life, a joy, and was being totally true to herself, true to her own integrity. What an example for Sadhguru to have as a child growing up.
Oh, and he didn't understand it then, but he loved to be around her, and later he understood it. He understood how she fed the animals. He understood all of it. And, you know, at that time, the mortality rate in the East is still less than it is in this country at that time. I mean, 113 is phenomenal here and now, but you can only imagine, you know, even 20 or 30 years ago in Asia, what kind of significance that has. It's just incredible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then after he talked about her, on these walks that you had with him when you were talking with him, and you were having these opportunities to be with this mystic, with this teacher, he talked about life calling someone. And I've talked with people that said, "I have no passion in life. I wish I could have a passion in life." But he was talking about when life calls you to live it, to go with your passion.
You know, I think we all have this idea, this mistaken idea that, oh, I'm supposed to be called to be a writer, or I'm supposed to be called to be a great musician, or there's something in me I just haven't discovered. Why don't I have any passion? We all have the same calling. There's something in us that wants to explode. There's something in us that wants to be enlightened, that wants to be one with everything. That's our calling. It's buried to certain degrees. And, you know, the more you fan it, the stronger it gets. But life is calling. And they talk about the inner gurus pulling you in and the outer gurus pushing you in. But this thing that never gets satisfied no matter what, that's calling. And what he's saying is it's just misplaced. We're all just looking for bliss. We're just a little confused.
Mm-hmm. And he found his. Tell us about his experience when he went through his transformation. He was in a very special place.
His father was a doctor. He was university educated. He didn't want to go to college, but he got so much pressure from the family, he went anyway. And his father wanted him to be a doctor, and he just became an English major because that was all he was interested in. And after he graduated college, he thought he'd make a little money so he could ride his motorcycle around the world, and he started getting into construction development. And then he started to make quite a bit of money. And there was a place in the town, Mysore, India is where he's from. It's a beautiful town near Bangalore, about an hour from Bangalore. It's just a really beautiful town, nice climate and beautiful trees. And there was this park, and he used to go there, and sometimes he would hold his business meetings at this particular park. Well, one day he goes to sit on a rock, and something happens where he describes what was him and what was other than him just merged into one, where nothing was separate from him anymore. And so, I mean, he had what I've read from others as an enlightened experience, and in a very short period of time, it became a permanent state for him.
Here he is, a man. He wears blue jeans. He
rides
has white hair. And rides a motorcycle. And he is absolutely, totally unlike in visual image of what we have been, I'll say, indoctrinated with. He doesn't have a turban around his head, and he doesn't dress all in white flowing robes, and he doesn't have 45 Rolls Royces in his garage.
He can wear a turban now and then.
Yeah, okay, that's all right. But he really is loose as a goose.
Yeah. See, that's the thing for me, because I used to think, okay, all right, who actually found these answers that I wanted? Buddha seemed to find him. Christ seemed to find him. Krishna seemed to find him. Some other Indian saints I read found him. Very few individuals seemed to find him. And so I wondered, how did these people get to be how they were? How did they ever become masters? Were they born different than me? And, you know, saints, just I knew they were cut from a different cloth. I was never going to be able to be a saint. So, but you meet somebody who's fully human, and then they're also this huge other thing. You think, I can get there from here. There's nothing wrong with the way I am. I just got to get more. I've got to find a way in, and I've got to be able to dissolve some of these boundaries I've created around myself. But I can go from here to there, and that's the best part. You know, nobody ran a four-minute mile until somebody ran it. And when you get to meet a living example of this, it really does inspire you that you, too, can, you know, be your fullest potential.
Midnight
for less.
Midnights with the Mystic. Cheryl, do you have a website regarding this book?
I do, midnightswiththemystic.com. And there's a little DVD, a trailer for a DVD I'm working on, and it's called Mystic Glimpses. And you'll get to see a little bit of a conversation with Sadhguru walking in the forest and by a fire and get a little taste of this.
Midnights with the Mystic. A little guide to freedom and bliss. And I think your story is very rich, Cheryl. And I think that your teacher, Sadhguru, is very, very rich as well. And I think that is what is important. When we realize that we're human beings growing through experiences to be able to make these discoveries of self-understanding, awareness that enable us to be free as people, and to be presently in mindfulness when we do it. I think it's absolutely incredible. Again, Cheryl Simone, go to her website, Midnights with the Mystic. Good stuff there. Check it out, and I think you'll have a good time. Cheryl, thank you so much for being my guest today and for being able to come in and join us at the last minute.
Donna, I'm so glad you read the book and you liked it and that you had me here today. It was my pleasure.
It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget, Midnights with the Mystic, and this little book, I'll tell you. It'll give you some insights, and it'll make you aware of some things that will maybe give you that aha you've been looking for. So, Midnights with a Mystic, Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. Good things to share with you. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
And if you'd like to call and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I'd be delighted to do that. Give me a buzz at 877-876-5227, 877-876-5227, or 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. If you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. So again, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, and 530-876-3222. Now, I want to let you know about the guests that are going to be coming up. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Dr. Tony LaMotta, What You Want, Wants You. I like the title, and she's got some good information to share. Also, we're going to be talking with Dr. Richard Petty on Friday. He is a marvelous physician. He's been trained in so many different modalities, and we're going to be talking about healing, meaning, and purpose. Now, also, we are going to, on Friday, be talking with Maribeth Ditmars about her son, Christopher. This is a wonderful story. A child teaches his family about love and how not to fear death. So that's the lineup that we have today. And by the way, if you go to BBS, you will find that all of my guests are now listed for the month of August. We've got a terrific lineup. So you can go in there and you can cruise through there and find out who's going to be on with us if you so desire. And don't forget, if you miss a show, you can always tune in anytime that's convenient for you by going into our archives, and you'll find all the instructions and information regarding that right there on bbsradio.com. What dream job suits your personality? Are you out looking for something? Well, I don't care what time of life you're in, if you are trying to find what fits you, and maybe you've been out of the workforce for a while. Well, I came across some information by Lawrence Shatkin that I thought is really some good information. If you thrive on tight deadlines, if you really enjoy working and finishing projects on your own, and you know how to get things done without causing a lot of fuss and chaos with your fellow workers, you're a very enterprising person. You persevere, you're responsible, you like challenges, and you love to go the extra mile. You like to exceed expectations. Stress? That's a no big thing for you. You just figure that's the spark that gets everything going and enables you to stay sharp and to stay focused. You are a self-starter. You have an entrepreneurial spirit, and you like bucking the odds in business and in life. So if you're an enterprising person, you'd be very good as a party planner, working as a paralegal, being involved in real estate, maybe running your own business like a boutique, working as a consultant, maybe being a press agent. How about an advertising professional? Those are just a few ideas we can toss out for you. Now, if you are more interested in fossils than in, let's say, fancy, gorgeous gems, if you'd rather watch CSI than Grey's Anatomy, and you consider yourself a multitasker, Lawrence has categorized you as an investigative type of person. Why? Because you seem to be a natural puzzle solver. You often have a theory for just about everything and enjoy coming up with unique answers, out-of-the-box situations. In fact, where many people are satisfied with just what is, you're going to say, wait a minute. You're smart, you've got a lot of versatility, you can just as easy go into the world of finances, journalism, or the medical field. So there's a lot for you. You'd be a very good veterinarian, technician, physical therapist, a reporter, financial analyst, physician's assistant. You are a person. Again, you're investigative. You're not afraid to do those problem solving. Now, what if you work with your intuition a lot? You like to solve problems utilizing your intuition. What if you enjoy working with music playing in the background and you prefer constant change to one daily task? Well, that means you're an artistic soul and you're creative and you like to be expressive in what you do. Your mind usually is busy with all kinds of original thoughts and you have fanciful moments that you thoroughly enjoy indulging in. You might prefer on the job autonomy. The fact is, you really, really do well when you have a few mild constraints like deadlines or guidelines, because by focusing this tremendous energy you have, you produce top-notch results. You'd be great as a floral designer, a chef, maybe a baker, designing special creations for people, interior designer, writer, courtroom sketch artist, and also crafts designer. Now, if you like to talk out problems, you don't have too much of a problem sympathizing with other people, even with perfect strangers. And if you have a tendency to be flexible, when something new comes into your lap, so to speak, you're a people person. That's right. You are something like a social butterfly. You thrive on interaction with others, even strangers, and like new experiences. And what's more, you're that rare kind of person who likes to lend a helping hand to friends and coworkers, and you don't expect anything in return. You just like to do it for the sake of doing it. You're very generous, and fair play is very important to you. Trust is very important to you. And because of that, most people like you. So being involved as a speech therapist, a social worker, maybe you want to be a tour guide, maybe a publicist. How about a personal trainer? Anything of that nature, a special events coordinator. As a people person, you've got a lot of options. Now, by the way, there is a website, and I didn't have one given for men, but I have this one for women. And by the way, I heard a commentary the other night that with a lot of the shifts that are occurring in the economy today, many jobs are being eliminated, especially in the manufacturing arena. The jobs have been offshored, so a lot of women that were working in assembly line work or doing something like that don't have very much opportunity to find jobs because they don't have certain levels of education. Well, here's a website that you can go to, womenforhire.com, womenforhire.com. There's all kinds of listings there. There's tips, and there's a lot of advice from a lot of different women. So if you're a female that's been looking for work, here's a specific site just for you. And the guys know their own sites that they prefer, but this is especially for the gals. So I wanted to be sure to share that with you today. Doesn't hurt to know. Every time we can share some information, pass it on, because it may just be that perfect piece of something that someone needs to give them the hope and the insight and the perspectives that they want to have in their life to make their life feel like it does have a purpose and it's as if it is worthwhile. So I know it's sometimes hard for people when they have layoffs. I've been there. I've experienced that in the past. And it does sort of put you into a twirling or a spiraling feeling that you don't know exactly where it's going to take you. Well, just sort of put on your mental seatbelt and hang on for the ride, because you never know what adventures might come your way because you've been released from something that you thought was security, and now you have a chance to expand your talents, your abilities, and reach out for something bigger and better. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. The telephone number to call in to is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. And just all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And after that, then you're welcome to ask me anything you like about anybody, anything at all. I've got a recipe here for fettuccine carbonara with sausage that if I have time today, I'll share it with you. Good stuff smells heavenly. Oh, it's wonderful and fragrant. But not only does it smell good, it tastes good. So have that pad of paper handy and pen, and we will be able to get that off to you today if we have the time. Now, I receive emails from different people and different stories, and this one came from Michael Josephson, and I want to thank him very much for this because it's a very special story. It's a personal experience he had. And by the way, if you have something you'd like to share with me, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Donna at DelphiInternational.com. I will be in the position to use it if that is something that fits in with what I have on the air. I would be delighted to be able to share the story and or recipe or whatever special something you want to send along to me. If you have a special joke you feel I'd enjoy, I don't care. Just go ahead and send it. Now, this is about a woman by the name of Sarah Tucholsky, and she was only 5'2". And she was in her senior year for Western Oregon University. She was a gal from the Northwest, just like myself. And she said that she loved softball, absolutely loved it, and was playing in a big game with Central Washington University. What were these games all about? Well, they were vying for the Division II NCAA playoffs. Now, Sarah was batting less than 200 all season. She hit the ball over the fence with two runners on. Now, this was quite an exciting moment for her. For those of you that love baseball, you know how hitting a ball over the wall can really be a rip-roaring, exciting moment. Well, she was so excited that when she made her run, she didn't touch first base. When she realized this, she turned to go back, but all of a sudden collapsed. One of her knees gave out. She couldn't move. Now, we're going to be taking a break in just a moment, and I'm going to tell you the rest of Sarah's story. Also, don't forget that pad of paper and pen, fettuccine carbonara with sausage. Or you can give me a call if you like at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. First base, miss it. Knee goes out. What happened to Sarah? We'll find out when we come back. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Before we went on break, we were talking about Sarah. Leg goes out. Her first base coach yelled that she had to crawl back to first base because if anyone on Sarah's team touched her, she'd be out and her home run would be nullified. Her coach encouraged her, crawl around the other bases to preserve your home run. But it was out of the question. She was in so much pain, she could not move. Well, what happened next was unprecedented. The star player on the other team, Mallory Holtman, asked the umpire if she and a teammate could carry Sarah around the bases. Now, this request had never, ever been asked for. Unprecedented, especially from an opponent fighting for a playoff. But there was nothing in the rules to say it couldn't be done. So they said, go for it. Without hesitation, Ms. Mallory and the shortstop, Liz Wallace, lifted Sarah and carried her, lowering her to touch each base with her good leg. When Mallory was interviewed after the game, she said, it's no big deal. In the end, it's not about winning and losing so much. It was about this girl. She hit it over the fence and was in terrible, terrible pain. She deserved the home run. And what Michael said is, what was done by Ms. Mallory was what he describes as common decency. He said, sadly, such kindness isn't common at all in sports, and that's why all the coaches, players, and spectators who were stunned by this spontaneous act of sportsmanship actually cried. They wept when they saw it. And that's how Mallory Holtman became a national hero. Now, by the way, her team lost 4-2. But Michael, who witnessed the event, said, in my eyes, there were no losers in this game. Everybody won. I want to thank Michael for sending me that story. I think it's absolutely incredible. Sometimes I feel we need to be aware that there are those special circumstances, and we become as big as we possibly can be. And when I say that, it's not from a positioning of superego. It's just we fill in whatever that void may be, as it was with Sarah, with her knee going out after she had hit a home run. And you fill the void. You take care of the need so that things can move on the way they're supposed to. I really enjoyed that. I hope you did, too. Okay, have you got your pad of paper and pen? Hey, fettuccine. If you like pasta, this is a delicious, delicious recipe. And I'm a fan of Italian sausage, and I enjoy bacon. So this is a recipe that I think has just got all the right kinds of flavors. So this is what you're going to need. 8 ounces of fettuccine pasta. 8 ounces. You're going to need 8 ounces of sweet Italian sausage, and you want to cut those into one-half thick slices. And that's 8 ounces of sweet Italian sausage cut into nice half-inch chunks. And then you're going to need 4 slices of bacon, and you want to cut the bacon into one-inch pieces. 4 slices of bacon cut into one-inch pieces. 1 onion chopped, and that'll come to about a cup. And I would say chop it a little bit more on the smaller, chunky side. That's what you want. You don't want great big chunks, but just it needs to be a little chunky. A clove of garlic minced, and a half a cup of white wine, or if you don't want to use white wine, use chicken broth. And then you can buy the pre-made Alfredo sauce. You can make your own. But just get 1 jar of Alfredo sauce and 1 package, that's a 10-ounce package, of frozen peas, and then 1/3 cup of basil leaves, thinly sliced. Your fresh basil for this is outstanding. Now, this is how simple it is. You're going to cook your pasta according to your package directions. You want to drain and reserve about 1/2 cup of the pasta water. And as the pasta is cooking, you can, in a large nonstick skillet, cook your sausage, your bacon, your onion, and your garlic. And oh, does it smell good. Just cook it until the bacon is nicely crisp and you've got all of those renderings and the flavors are just right there, just filling the air in your kitchen. You stir it, and the sausage and bacon should be nicely browned. It'll take you about 6 or 7 minutes. Then you want to add your wine, or if you don't want to use the wine, you add the chicken broth. You let it boil for a minute, and then stir in the prepared Alfredo sauce and the peas and the reserved 1/2 cup of the pasta water. Why pasta water? Because it's got the floury essence from the pasta being boiled, so why not use it? It gives that just an ever so slight amount of thickening. Return everything to a boil in your big skillet. Reduce your heat to low and let it simmer until the sausage and, you know, the bacon, everything's really cooked through. Another 6 or 7 minutes. And then take your pasta, put it in a large serving bowl, and toss it with your sauce mixture until well combined. And then you just sprinkle it with basil leaves. And there you've got a meal to serve. Have a little bit of Parmesan maybe on the side, if that's something that you like to have there. Real simple, easy recipe. Kids like this, too. They really like the taste of bacon. So that is fettuccine carbonara with sausage. And it is something that you can even make substitutes with this. If you didn't want sausage, use a little chicken. If you like bacon, you don't like bacon, you can. This is a recipe that you can mix and match a lot of things with, so you can have a good time with it. Donna Siebel here, 877-876-5227. Now, don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be talking about what you want, wants you. Dr. Tony LaMotta is going to be my guest, and we're going to be having a good time with her. Now, I've got a little bit of a story here. I love synchronicity. And so many times we will have what we call coincidences in life. And Mabel Marchese of Miami, Florida, had an experience. She said before she left her house, she took a look at herself in her mirror in her hallway, and she saw that she looked pretty good, but she had a scar that had gone across her neck above her collarbone. It reminded her always, every time she saw it, she was very self-conscious about it, that she had undergone surgery 2 months earlier for thyroid cancer. And she had just completed all of her radioactive iodine treatment. Her doctor said her prognosis was very good. And it was something that she was so pleased that was great, but she just really was always uncomfortable with the fact that she had to even go through this. And was she really past it? Fears kept popping up. And she said, I'd just push my fears to the background, and that this one day at lunchtime she decided she was going to go out to the store, and while she was waiting her turn as she was being checked out, she said she went over all of the things that she needed to do, and she happened to look up. She heard a little bit of a commotion with a little boy, and his grandmother looked up, and Grandma was playing with him, and he said, I'm so happy I found you. But when she was noticing Grandma, she noticed that this was a woman that had a scar right below where she had had the surgery done. She had apparently gone through a similar surgery, and there she was enjoying her grandson, and she thought to herself, if this woman can survive it, so can I. Oh, and by the way, Mabel had asked for a sign to give her hope, just that morning, and she was given it that very afternoon. Donna Sebo here. I know we're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a great one. We'll be right here, same time, same place at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.